It is Wednesday. It's April 10. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. We have two bumper Champions League quarterfinals on first leg at the moment, and there's goals galore already in the first half as well. Bayern Munich 2-1 up over Arsenal in London, and Real Madrid, after going a goal down after 2 minutes, Madrid 2-1 up over Manchester City. Both games getting towards the 40-minute mark. All the teams around for the round in the NRL, and all the round one groups for the Masters are out as well. And we'll cross to Evan Priest over there at Augusta National in about an hour's time. But joining us, as you heard in the intro this morning, and they've had two blues already this morning, is Dean Bulldog Ritchie, along with the great Loz. How are you, Bulldog?
Yeah, good morning, Mido. Good morning, Loz. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, we've already had a couple of skirmishes. One was actually outside the premises. I won't go into exactly what happened because it may end up being potentially a civil matter. But it wasn't a good start. But look, we're on air now.
He was blowing up too. He didn't know who was in front of him.
Yeah.
What'd you do, Loz? I don't want
to say, because I end up doing something that might get me in a bit of trouble. So I'd rather not say.
Let's just
say. And outside in the studio, he got into me again. So that's before 5:39.
I just stayed at the lights.
It's good to be here, Laurie.
That's all. I just stayed at the lights.
So you realised there was a green arrow behind you.
Oh, yeah.
He deliberately waited on the green, and then it went to amber, and then I started tooting. And then, of course, I had to shoot through. It was still legal, of course. Yeah. I thought he was asleep at the wheel, but it wasn't. He knew I was there.
Should have seen the angry head he had on. He didn't know who it was.
What was he angry? Some knucklehead at the light. He goes green. He just stands there like a fool.
Great way to start the morning, Bulldog. I could see you were up and about then. You were going off in the car.
Would you be happy if it was me? Anyway, it's good to be here.
Pest behaviour.
Good to be up early in the morning.
It was, wasn't it? Unnecessary. Just jabbing early.
Yeah. When you're childish.
Almost childish,
well.
Mido. Yeah. If you did that when you were 8 and your L's, your dad would give you a clip over the ear for being immature.
Probably.
I am immature, Dean.
I'm well aware.
Yeah. A bit going on, fellas. Bit going on with the teams coming out yesterday. Naturally, South Sydney, front and back pages. A lot going on there. Damien Cook will be on our show just after 7 o'clock this morning. Cookie's been dropped. Is he a scapegoat?
Yes. I think that they obviously had to make changes. There's no denying that. The interesting one for me, what they would have done if Latrell was still available for selection. There's other players in that team that I think are under pressure, and they all need to have a hard look at themselves. And I suppose a line in the sand has been drawn, because if they'll be looking around going, well, if he drops Damien, they can drop the majority of us. He's a state of origin player. I'm not disagreeing in 100% with the decision. I'm not saying that it was the wrong decision, but what I'm saying is there'd be plenty others there that would be looking over their shoulder now, knowing that if Damien's not there, then they're at risk of not being there the week after. But I was a little bit surprised he wasn't in the 18, or the 17. I see he's been named. It'd be interesting to see whether he has to go back and play reserve grade or he just has a week to freshen up. That was one of the big decisions that Jason Demetrio made yesterday. But is it enough to save his job?
Well, it's clearly a statement from Demetrio saying, I've had enough. I'm sick of keeping blokes in first grade through loyalty when the loyalty's not essentially being repaid through results. I said it before, Loz, you can have loyalty and you can have blind loyalty. And I think it was time for JD to make some changes. South look a bit slow. Cookie is probably unlucky, to be fair. I mean, he's an origin hooker. But that young Peter Mamazoulas has been knocking on the door for a while now. He's a good young player. And Demetrio's got nothing to lose. He's got absolutely nothing to lose now. And I think you'll find, very quietly, he's been told to go out there and gamble. Throw caution. Have a crack. We're coming last. Your job's on the line. Go out and pick a side that you think can win, but also pick a side that you think, okay, I'm not just going to go down the same old beaten path again.
What's wrong with Cookie's game, though, Loz? Have you seen on the field that possibly prompted
confidence,
the decision?
Lack of confidence, like all of them. defensively, not being found out, but defensively getting himself into positions where he's getting isolated and missing some tackles. But again, that's the issue with this South Sydney team. There's not many of them that aren't having the same issues that the person next to him's having.
Well, the text we got there, personally, I think Cody Walker should be dropped. Willow from Ashcroft.
Well, you could could make a case for Cody, but you could make a case for a number of them that haven't been playing well. But that's the way he's gone this weekend, Jason, and I'm hoping it works out for him, because it sounds like he's a dead man walking. They're coming up against the Sharks team, who are coming off a bye themselves, so they'll be fit and fresh. They welcome back a couple of players, and it's a must-win game. So they've put a bit of speed, they've put a few young legs out there, inexperienced players. Hopefully the pressure won't get to them, and hopefully they just go out there and play and throw the ball around and use their natural talent and see what happens, because I think that's the way they're going to beat the Sharks. They can't be sort of too tight when they go out there. They've just got to enjoy themselves, use the skills that they've got, and really try and test this Sharks team. You know, I've heard a lot about Jai Gray. I know that Munro's a really good player. Memazoulis, haven't seen a lot of him, but very skillful apparently. So, look, I'm excited for those players that they're getting an opportunity. But again, it'll come down to the forwards, and it'll come down to Cody and Jack and their leadership skills to see whether they can step up with no Latrell there.
The South officials just want to see something. Everyone expects and accepts losses. It's part of sport. Mm. But when you're getting flogged, that's why. Clearly, Dimitro's in the crosshairs. If South go out and put on a performance in the weekend, they may not win. But if it's a 20-18 or 14-12, it just might keep JD in a job.
So are you saying that South's administration have told him to make changes?
To the team?
Yeah, is that what you're saying?
No,
that South's administration have
said,
Jason,
the suggestion I'm saying is that I think
you need to make change.
An inner feel at the club that go out there and gamble. Have a bit of a crack, because you're going down the tubes picking the same team every week. They're not sticking their nose in a selection. Don't get me wrong, Laurie. I'm just merely saying that you speak to some of the officials and they've sort of insinuated that, JD, go out and make some changes. Do something different, because it's not working what you're doing right now. If there's a couple of kids in reserve grade, Mamazoulis, Jai Gray, Tyrone Munro, pick them.
Yeah,
you've got nothing to lose.
But is that what they're saying internally to each other, or are they putting that pressure on the coach? Because if you're putting that pressure on the coach, that's not the way to run an operation.
I think it's more internally, Loz. Whether it gets back to JD, I couldn't tell you what the conversations have been.
Because I couldn't
with
imagine
Dimitro.
Too many people telling Wayne Bennett that he needs to make change.
But I don't think Dimitro's silly either, Laurie. He knows that at the moment, you know, his contract's about to be torn up.
So he
thinks, well, I might as well have a crack.
No.
Have a throw up the stumps.
I get all that, but I'm just... There's still got to be a separation of powers. I think if you're a footy coach, you're responsible for your team. You can't have anyone inside that office telling you that, mate, you've got to put X and Y in the footy team. Otherwise, that doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't think anyone there is telling Jason Dimitro who that he should or shouldn't pick. I think there's just a general acceptance that there's some kids there, use them. Because if you pick the same team, we get the same result, you're gone. You're gone. I don't know how long JD's got. Look, I think Buzz might have pointed out the other day, Adam O'Brien was basically told he had a game or two left, and he fought his way out of it somehow.
Yeah,
it was miraculous, but he did it, and now he's got a contract extension. So, it's not beyond JD, but with the Sharks, Storm, and Panthers as your next three games, with a bye in there somewhere, that's not going to be simple.
Yeah, this is where, and again, I've been around a long time, I don't get it from footy clubs. If they're of the belief that he's got 80 minutes to go, then you're 90% certain that he's gone. What's one game of football do to save his season?
I think the one game of football is for Dimitro to instill some steel into his side. That one game, Laurie, may not be the end of him. As I said, if there's a performance which shows that they're playing for their coach, if they go out and get beaten by 36-0 again, and the last two or three results have been appalling, then clearly they're not playing for him. Souths aren't viewing this, Laurie, as five games. They're viewing this as 20 games. And four of the five teams they won or beat in those 20 games are lower teams. Titans, Tigers, Dragons, Bulldogs. Not your elite sides. Mm. They've beaten one good side, the Warriors, one good side in 20 games, which is almost a season. Mm. So they've been poor for a whole year now.
Yep.
That's where the problem is.
Mm. Yeah, I get all that. But when you're confident that this is your coach and you re-sign him during that period where they're going poor too, that's you've got to give him time, don't you? Because he's going through that bad period. You know that the results aren't great, and then you re-sign him. You're better off not re-signing him.
Don't get me wrong. I don't want people to sit here thinking that I'm trying to get rid of Jason Demetra. I actually like JD.
Yeah,
what
I
think personally doesn't
too.
Matter, but he's a good fella, and you know he always looks after the media. So I'm not chasing his scalp. I'm just simply saying, at what point do South Sydney say, "Okay, JD, this is not working"?
Yeah, I understand that as well, because you can't just keep getting results like they've been getting. But I just hate this line. You've got one game. Like, you either know or you don't. You know that he can get himself out of it, or you just think that he's lost the dressing shed, and if that's the case, then there's no coming back. Then you make that decision. But I don't like when they come out and do the old, "You've got one game." Or is that the media saying one game?
Oh, the media's writing it, Laurie, but obviously the media, myself included, is hearing information. We're not just writing it based on our opinions. It's an educated story, so to speak. The more I ring around, though, gents, the more I'm told that there is no divisions at the club. There's no backstabbing. As far as I'm being told, and there's no angst, there's no cliques. They seem to be quite united off the field in terms of morale, but that's just not transferring onto the field for results.
Gosh, they're out to $41 to win the premiership. They were single figures in the preseason, the Bunnies, to win the comp with Tab this year. Just some of your say on the situation there. The Bunnies, 0419-767-272. It all comes back to their forwards. Forward pack is reserve grade spec at the moment. They don't punch up the field well enough, and then the playmakers can't do anything off the back of it, says Jesse from the Gong. Would JD have dropped Latrell if he didn't get suspended? Latrell was not playing well. Cook can't be the only reason they're not winning. No names. That one. Morning, guys. Cody should be the first person dropped. Latrell should be put on the wing until he finds some form. Cheers, Queenslander Dave. Well, there's Latrell, front page of the Telegraph. Trell's call, footy or farming, is the headline there. Back page of the Telegraph, left in the dark, South's in crisis. D-Day looms for Trell. Damien Cook axed, JD omitted from secret meetings. Lots of different angles to the South situation covered today there. And back page of the City Morning Herald, I'm all in. Mitchell vows to fight on for Rabbitoh's cause. And Michael Chemis here writing about the meetings that have taken place, between Latrell Mitchell's advisor, Matt Rose, his agent, Wach Wright, as well. And the club there, the Bunnies, and just that Latrell Mitchell has said that, he's committed to the cause there at the Bunnies. And he's got a lot left to achieve in rugby league, which certainly will warm the hearts of South fans, knowing what we know what he can do when he's at his best. But Jack Whiten, he faced the media yesterday. He wasn't overly keen to speak too much when he was asked about Mitchell, saying a mate protects a mate by not talking about him. But he is adamant that Latrell still loves the game in response to those questions as to whether he could walk away, while also backing Jason Demetrio. We've got his back and he's got ours, said Whiten yesterday. Saliva Havili also spoke and said Latrell spoke to the group, was apologetic and owned his actions. So that is, something that I think Latrell absolutely needed to do.
Yeah, oh, those silly things that he did. And there's no denying that. And he's got 3 weeks to think about it. And hopefully in those 3 weeks, South can get a couple of wins on the board and save the coach's career. What they have done, they've given some young guys an opportunity. But some of the senior blokes still need to stand up. You know, Cody needs to take a bit more responsibility. And in fact, if you're looking at South, they just need to show highlights of what Jack Whiten does in a game. So you see this? He's just competing. Give me what Jack does. All 17 this week, and let's see how far we go.
They're saying the right things, aren't they, Loss?
You can't go wrong if you're putting in the effort like what Jack does.
I mean, they're all saying they've got JD's back and we're behind him. We support him. Mm. But they're not showing that on the field. It's easy to front the media and say, oh, you know.
Good to have a bit of grit, though.
We love Jason Demetro, and what he's going through is terrible. Yeah. But go out there and show it and fight for him.
Yep, that's exactly right. And when it gets tough, don't fold easily. That's what they look like they're doing. When it gets a bit hard, it's like, ooh, we cave in. Show some strength and do it together. That's the best way to fight yourself out of it, is to have 17 guys just committed to doing the little things as well as they possibly can and just fight tooth and nail. And if someone's running at you, you just make a commitment that I'm going to try and stop him. I've got to stop him. That's my job. I've got to stop him. I've got to get myself in front and put my body on the line. And whatever happens to me, happens to me, but that's my role.
I haven't spoken to Latrell. He doesn't speak to me, which is fine. But I just get the feeling, Mido, that the penny has finally dropped with Latrell. He's lost a lot of support at the club. The power he had in the corridors of power at South has vanished. The fans have turned on him. I think he's finally overstepped that line with that swagger that he's got. And now, having apologised to his teammates, maybe now he's realised that he's not above the game nor the club. And maybe this is the awakening Latrell needed to change his ways and maybe change his attitude. Right or wrong?
Oh, you're asking me right or wrong?
No, that's what I believe.
Oh,
I think that's right with Latrell. I think the penny has finally dropped and you might see a different Latrell from now on.
Yeah, well, you'd like to think it has because he's been in the spotlight now for a number of years and he's been the most talked about player on this program.
He's missed too many games through suspension.
And just those silly acts. Just those silly acts. Just an act of frustration the other day. You know, and you can't have it in a team when you're struggling and you're the leader. Yes, he does a lot of good things, but those good things get overlooked because of what he does on the field. So he's got 3 weeks now to reflect on what he's done, reflect on the position that he's put his team in, and hopefully, if they're all together, they respond in the right fashion, win a couple of games, and then when Latrell comes back, hopefully fitter and fresher, he repays the group that have looked after him over the last 3 weeks.
The Courier-Mail front and back page. Naturally, a big build-up to the Battle of Brisbane this week between the Dolphins and the Broncos, although all smiles behind the battle feuds is the headline with Adam Reynolds and Herbie Farnworth, who's obviously out injured for the game this week. That's on the front page of the Courier-Mail. On the back page, ready for battle, prop to play through the pain against former club in Derby blockbuster, of course, Flegler, Tom Flegler. Looks like he will take his place, been battling a shoulder injury there ahead of the game against the Broncos, his former club. How much animosity is there? The Courier-Mail has been going hard at the animosity angle all week. I mean, it's early days. Obviously, you want to really drum up, I guess, you know, an anti-Bronco sentiment, an anti-Dolphin sentiment, and really make this, you know, some sort of hateful derby, a South Roosters type situation going forward. Generally, it takes time for those sort of things to, and a lot of, you know, I don't know, signings, pinching players from the other clubs, which you've already seen, the incidents on the field, for that to sort of envelop. How much animosity are you aware of, Bulldog, up north in Queensland between these two clubs, is there?
Yeah, I think there is, Mido. Clearly, I don't live there, so I'm not right in the middle of it all. But I do know that the Dolphins have come in and they have tried to really butt heads with the Broncos, not so much deliberately, but just to try to build a bit of that feud, to build some crosstown rivalry.
I think you need it.
And you need it. You need it. And it's exactly what's happened here. We're on the front page of the Courier-Mail, the main newspaper in town, and there's your two teams. It has to start somewhere. And that will build and build over time, a bit like the Swans and GWS. It's now a big rivalry. Mm. It wasn't to start off with. It does take time, but certainly it is there. Because there's a lot of anti-Bronco sentiment before the Dolphins came in. Not anti as in we don't like you. Anti, we're just a bit sick of the domination you have in this town. Can you present us with another option?
Yeah, no, you're true. Every time you speak and say something, Bulldog, are you looking for me to continue the conversation?
Well, I thought that's how it worked in radio. No, I finish, you take over.
No, well, it's 6 o'clock.
Right, okay.
As you know, in this team, you've got to be looking at the clock.
Misread the entire interpretation of radio. Yeah. I thought when I stopped, you started.
No.
Clearly,
o'clock.
From now on, I'll just keep going. I won't look at you.
How are you, Dick?
Well, I could be better. I mean, last week I talked to you, I was just getting to Maui, and now I'm just leaving Maui. So I'd say I was better last week than I am right now, that's for sure.
Well, you can get over the holiday blues by getting into the Masters. I'm sure that will help one of the best weeks of the year. And actually, Bulldog, you were just asking or pondering something about Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Dick, I was just talking to Laurie about Tiger, and Laurie said, look, I think it would be great if we could see Tiger in the third round. And my argument was that I don't want to see Tiger Woods being deemed a success by merely making the cut. I want to remember Tiger as being the legend that won 20-odd majors. Is him playing on when he's clearly injured and perhaps past his best, is it damaging his legacy?
I don't think so, but I heard the conversation when I was on hold, and I think you're both right. I think you're both on to something. Yes, we want to see greatness from Tiger Woods, particularly at Augusta, but coming off what he has come off over the last 6 to 9 months, he has not played in nearly as many tournaments as we thought we'd see him in leading up. So he obviously isn't as healthy as we thought he was going to be. So in this particular circumstance, this particular Masters, I think him making the cut, having a good showing, getting, you know, a T36 or a T38, I think that actually would boost confidence for what he might be able to do in future majors when he is more healthy, particularly at Augusta. He should be able to compete at this golf course well into his 50s. There is no question about that. We've seen that from Bernhard Langer. We've seen that from Freddie Couples. And Tiger Woods is far better player than Freddie or Bernhard ever meant to be. No disrespect for those two, but he is arguably the greatest of all time. So Tiger should be able to compete for many, many years. This is not the year that Tiger gets a top 20 just because of his physical condition. But I think making the cut, and I believe it's just an even money bet right now, making the cut. I would probably lean towards Tiger making the cut, but that's certainly just a hope play more so than anything else.
Dick, is there an acceptance over there that Tiger won't win another major, or is that riding him off too prematurely?
I think that there is acceptance might be too strong. But I think we're at the point now where we see so many great golfers in between the ages of 22 and 32, and they're not going away, guys. and there's only more coming in, right? I mean, Ludwig Åberg is the latest example of just this early 20s wonder kid that's going to come in and just make it tougher and tougher and tougher for golfers in their 40s to win a major.
Who do you like then, Dick? Who are we betting on for the Masters?
Well, guys, I mean, it's tough to put money on a 4.5 or 5-to-1 play, but I mean, Scottie Scheffler is as obvious a pick for this Masters as probably Tiger Woods in his prime, and it's the lowest odds of anybody we've seen to win the Masters since Tiger Woods in his prime. I mean, I think a top five for Scottie, that seems just to be, it's been free money lately, guys. If you just continued to bet Scottie top five over his last 10 tournaments, 20 tournaments, you would definitely be in the positive. There's no question about that. I'm going to lean towards a guy. I'll give you two picks. I'll give you my value play, which I think is Hideki Matsuyama. I think he is every bit as capable of winning this tournament again as those top five or six guys on the odds board are, and he is down below those guys on the odds board, so that's a very good value play, I think, and he's playing excellent golf. His approach game is prime Hideki right now. But, guys, I'm going to go with a guy that if there's one name in the world that deserves to win a major that has not yet won a major, it's Xander Schauffele, guys. I mean, he is always in the top 10. Every single tournament, he's in the top 10. The only difference between him and these other guys is he hasn't gotten over the hump yet and won a major championship. Now, some may think, hey, you got to win a couple, you know, of these elevated events first and kind of work your way into the Masters. But Xander Schauffele, there's no weakness to his game, guys. And we've talked about him many times before. And again, he's a guy that if you put a lot of money on his top tens, you would be way, way up. If you put a lot of money on his win equity, you'd be way, way down because he just doesn't win that much. So I think the safe play is just to play a nice Xander Schauffele top 10, but maybe sprinkle a little bit on the win as well, because at some point that guy is going to win a major championship.
Rightio then, Dick. What about our Aussies? Who's our top pick over there, do you think?
Well, you know, experience always matters. Adam Scott is playing good golf. Jason Day is playing good golf. Those two guys are, I saw you, I heard you mention that Jason's playing with Tiger Woods. I don't think either one of them has win equity anymore at this point, but both of those guys have shown numerous times that Augusta is no fear for them, particularly Adam Scott. So I like both of those guys. I will always like both of those guys in elevated events where it really matters, and because they just have such great form at that course.
Dick, I'll be fascinated to know what happens inside the locker room. Do you think there'll be any hidden hostility between the PGA and LIV players?
I don't think so, guys. And I don't know if you've seen the latest Full Swing on Netflix, but there is more hostility between the European Ryder Cup team and the American Ryder Cup team than there was between the LIV golfers and the PGA Tour golfers. So since this is year number two of these guys coming to Augusta, and we really didn't see any hostilities at all last year, and in fact, we saw surprisingly tremendous performances from the LIV golfers. I'm not going to make the same mistake with you guys that I made last year. I mean, I basically sat here with you a year ago today, and I said fade every single LIV golfer going into Augusta because they just haven't played the same type of competition that the PGA Tour players have played. And boy, did that flop, because, I mean, what do we have, three LIV golfers in the top six in last year's Masters? So I'm not putting any of those LIV guys out to pasture going into this tournament, that's for sure.
Okay, let's talk March Madness, which came to a conclusion. We'll start with the men. UConn going back-to-back 75-60 over Purdue. Zach Edey, I guess, a bit of a one-man band there for Purdue, but UConn, clearly the best team all season, fair to say, Dick?
They were the best team all season. It's funny, the only reason I didn't want to pick them for the championship, I put them in my bracket, but everybody else put them in their bracket too. But, I mean, the only reason I didn't want to take them because I just wanted to fade the back-to-back notion of a national champion. Even though they were the best team going in, you just don't win back-to-back national championships. It's only happened six or seven times, six or seven different schools in the last 100 years, and the last being over 15 years ago. So what Coach Hurley and UConn have done is truly remarkable. He's a very bold coach. He comes out and says, you know, we are the standard barrier. We are going to make a dynasty. He's very, very outspoken. People love him. And, he's not mean, but he's very, very tough. He's a very, very gruff guy with a great personality. He knows how to separate his gruffness while he's coaching and still be a very fun person to talk to on the air as well. So I think that's a really good combination. And, you're going to have guys flocking to want to go to UConn and play for him for the next 5 or 10 years. There's no question about that.
And we're going down the final straight in the NBA. Dick, there's not too many games left. Who are some of the sides that are going to miss out, and who's the standouts on either conference?
Well, I mean, we have to stick with Boston in the East. It would be a massive, massive upset for somebody to get Boston. They have just proven to be the best team by far in that conference all season long. Saw where they're up on second place by something like 12 or 13 games. It's just ridiculous, but what they've been able to do. The team that I think is intriguing, though, and is now starting to get healthy, is Philadelphia. So Philadelphia is a team down the board in those standings that I think could give Boston a little run, potentially could make the Eastern Conference Finals. So they're a team to watch. I am absolutely fascinated to see what the LA Lakers do in the playoffs. I think that they set up, if they are the 8th seed and play Denver in the first round, that is the time I want to see the Denver Nuggets if I'm Los Angeles. I want AD healthy. Hopefully his eye is okay. I want LeBron healthy. I want these guys not, feeling the effects of two or three playoff series where they're really beaten down. I want them to get to Denver early because I think that's the one team in the Western Conference that I think can get Denver. Minnesota's intriguing now. It sounds like Carl Anthony Towns is going to come back. They have no prayer without him. But if they have Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, they're a team that at least poses a threat to Denver. I like teams, however, though, that have reached the conference finals before I'm ready to pick them to win the conference finals. So I won't have Minnesota winning. I mean, you kind of have to stick with chalk right now in Denver and Boston.
Just before we leave basketball, the women's NCAA final, South Carolina, clearly again the best team, 87-75 over Caitlin Clark's Iowa. But I believe the ratings, again, just astronomical, Dick.
Guys, 18 million on average with a high of 24 million is the most watched women's sporting event of all time. You have it was the most watched basketball game in the last 5 years. That counts NBA and college basketball, men and women, more than any NBA Finals game was watched, that Iowa and South Carolina. What's going to be interesting to see is, does this carry over after Caitlin Clark in the WNBA? I'm loving the fact that I'm a WNBA broadcaster, and I get to call Caitlin Clark's games twice every year. So that's going to be a lot of fun. The only thing better is if she would have been, if Seattle would have gotten the number one overall pick, then I'd get to call her in every game. But they're already changing arena venues. I saw where the Las Vegas Aces WNBA team is for the Indiana game is moving out of their 8,000-seat arena and into T-Mobile Arena that seats 18,000 because they need that size in arena because they're going to fill it when Caitlin Clark comes. I've heard that every home game is sold out for Indiana, their home games. She is a supernova. And the question is, how much of the attention that was brought to an excellent women's NCAA tournament is going to carry over to future years, or are we going to see it, you know, plummet back down to where it was before Caitlin Clark? I don't think it'll go back down. I think we'll see a rise. The baseline will rise because people know now that there are great women's basketball players in college and people appreciate the game more than they ever have before. But there certainly will be a dip when Caitlin Clark leaves college basketball. But that rise is going to be seen in the WNBA with her.
Dick, I watched the final yesterday, the men's, and I saw it being played in, I think it was Arizona, the footy stadium. Is that where they always take the final, to an open door venue?
They have open for the venue, last... Sorry. Yeah, there's the last 30 years or so, they closed the roof on that. They don't play outside, but they want to move it to football because they want to put as many butts in seats as possible. I've been to many of those in football stadiums. They're sterile. The atmosphere's not great, even though it's filled. It's just not the same watching a basketball game in a football stadium as it is watching a football game in a football stadium because the fans are so far away from the court. So it's not great, but they want as many people as possible. They always want to, you know, advertise, oh, we got 75,000 to watch this game. We got 80,000 to watch this game. But I preferred it, you know, 30 years ago when they had it in college basketball, college arenas, or even NBA arenas instead of NFL stadiums.
Dick, there's a fair bit of chatter on social media last night, which I was keeping an eye on, but the theme of it was that the NFL had seven openings this year. Bill Belichick wanted to work and coach, but couldn't find a job. Where does Bill Belichick stand now in terms of his future?
Boy, guys, the only fit I potentially see for Bill Belichick is Dallas. If Mike McCarthy has another year that approaches what he had this past year, we're going to see both him and Dak Prescott gone. And I think Jerry Jones will just be like, kind of throw his hands up and say, hey, you know what, Bill, come on in, you run the show. Let's see if the Belichick magic will work here in Dallas. That's really the only fit I see, because I don't think there's a lot of franchises that want to hand their team over to Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick won't just come in and coach the football team. Bill Belichick wants to run the operation like he did in New England. And there's just not a lot of owners, not a lot of general managers that want to give that up to a guy that's, you know, 70 plus years of age.
Could Bill ever change, Dick, or that's just who Bill Belichick is?
That's who he is. You know, he was actually in Seattle this past week for the last week with my Washington Huskies because we just hired his son to be the defensive coordinator. So he's been running a football camp over the last week in Seattle. It's kind of fun to see Bill Belichick wearing my Husky colors walking around the sidelines. But you know, I think he might do a little bit of media. As funny as that sounds, he was actually pretty good when he was on with College Game Day this last year for the Army-Navy game. He was very funny, you know, dry sense of humor. He might do a little TV this year, and he'll try to get back into it. But again, I think it's got to be that perfect fit for him.
Yeah, someone just texted in about what was he doing there at Huskies training. But they've also texted in saying, Dick, I'm hearing J.J. McCarthy's jumped Drake Maye in the quarterback draft rankings.
Well, he has in some quarterback draft rankings, that's for sure. I mean, I think Drake Maye has always been like the number two overall behind Caleb Williams, but nobody's stock has risen more over the last month than J.J. McCarthy. I don't really get it. I think that a guy, if he's that good and that talented, then why is he only throwing about 20 passes a game? Wouldn't Jim Harbaugh want to use his quarterback more than that if he was that good? And yet Jim Harbaugh is touting him as the best quarterback coming out in the draft. I've got to see the deep passing to be a big-time NFL star, and I don't see it from J.J. McCarthy. I see leadership. I see athleticism. I don't think he's going to be a bust. But, I mean, my guy at Washington, Michael Penix, throws the best deep ball of anybody in this draft. He is going to be passed up by four or five teams that'll take quarterbacks ahead of Michael Penix. And I swear, they're going to be ruining the day, you know, a year from now, just like the Carolina Panthers are ruining the day that they did not take C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. There are going to be four or five teams that are going to rue the day because they take Drake Maye and J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels over Michael Penix.
We've got a couple of texts here wanting us to ask you about John Calipari leaving Kentucky. Of course, this is in men's college basketball.
Stunner, guys. I mean, that was one I had to look at the TV twice when I saw the ticker. I was like, what, did that say Arkansas? Now, just a few days ago, a lot of people were talking about him potentially being fired at Kentucky because he certainly hasn't reached the level that he did 10 to 15 years ago there. But to go to Arkansas is an interesting move. I mean, it's a big conference SEC, but Arkansas hasn't been a power. They've had a couple of years, but they haven't been a power since Nolan Richardson was there 30 years ago. So it's a very interesting move. It's great for Kentucky, for those people that wanted him out, because Arkansas has got to buy him out of his contract from Kentucky. So Kentucky gets, I think it was $30 million was that buyout. It's a huge buyout to get John Calipari. But yeah, I was very stunned to see that. If you would have told me John Calipari would have been fired, I would have believed that more than I would have him just leaving on his own to go to Arkansas.
Well, mate, thank you as always. Safe travels home. Enjoy the Masters.
Thank you, sir. I love this week. Can't wait to watch.
Absolute goal fest in these Champions League quarterfinals this morning. First legs looking like two pulsating matches in progress, both with around 10 to 15 minutes plus stoppage time remaining. So in London at the Emirates, Arsenal and Bayern Munich is 2-2. So Arsenal have equalised. Trossard scoring after 76 minutes. Saka put them ahead after 12. Then, Munich went bang, bang in the 18th and 32nd minutes. The second goal scored by Harry Kane from the penalty spot. Arsenal fans would have absolutely hated that. But Trossard equalising, so 2-2 at the Emirates. And what a game this is at the Bernabeu. Manchester City have gone back ahead of Real Madrid 3-2. So Bernardo Silva put City up after just 2 minutes. Then Madrid scored in the 12th and 14th minutes. Foden and another goal for City there in the 71st minute. So 3-2. City leading in Spain as it stands. Other results, in fact, also I wanted to mention the English Championship because it's getting right to the crucial part of the season there as far as promotion to the Premier League is concerned. And Leicester, Leeds and Ipswich, all in contention for automatic promotion with only about four or five games left each. They've got
two go up.
two go up automatically, and then 3 to 6 play off for that third promotion position, Loz. Right. So as it stands this morning, Leeds and Sunderland is scoreless. The other game, well, Millwall have gone ahead of Leicester 1-0. And Leicester City have been leading the championship. But Leeds at the moment, with Leicester behind and Leeds drawing, Leeds move up to 87 points. So Leicester are on 88. These are the live standings. Leicester on 88, Leeds on 87. Ipswich aren't playing this morning. They're also on 87, but they've played a game less. So it's out of those three to get the two automatic spots. And you've got then Southampton in fourth on 78, West Brom in fifth on 69, Norwich in sixth on 68, and they look like they'll be the playoff teams because Coventry and Preston are 5 points further back from them. So that's all on this morning as well. Overnight in the IPL, some Aussie involvement in the form of Travis Head and Pat Cummins. Sunrisers Hyderabad, 9 for 182, have beaten the Punjab Kings by 2 runs, 6 for 180, the Kings. But for Sunrisers Hyderabad, Travis Head, 21 off 15 deliveries. Pat Cummins was out for 3 down the order. He's the captain of Sunrisers. And as far as the bowling was concerned, Paddy Cummins, 4 overs, 1 for 22, pretty economical, but he got a nice wicket. He's bowled Johnny Bairstow for a duck, so we'll take that every day of the week. See you, Johnny. So Paddy Cummins there, not a bad performance as his side won barely by 2 runs overnight. We've got Adam Pengilly coming up soon. We've got Evan Priest over at Augusta National in about 12 minutes' time joining us as well. Bulldogs in the house this morning. We'll get into his column, Bulldogs Bite, a little bit later this morning. Plenty of bite in that column today. A bit of bite between these two all morning so far, in fact.
No, we've been good this morning. We haven't had many blues on here, have we?
No.
They've just been all off here.
See, they're trying to drag us down now.
That's exactly right. Be careful, otherwise we'll gang up on you.
You won't put a wedge between us. Try as you might.
That's what usually happens. We get a common enemy, and me and Bulldog stick tight with each other and attack.
And then once that blows up, we turn on each other.
Yep. Yeah.
And in the end, the last man in the lifeboat.
The world of rugby league. Goal here, 3-3. Madrid have scored against City.
Who's favourites in this game?
Oh, it's just... I don't know what the market was pre-game. Was
this Real Madrid, I suppose.
I think, actually, City were just favourites.
Yeah, right.
Just barely.
You mentioned the IPL. Gee, Starkey's struggling over there, isn't he? He's on $4.4 million, I think. And he's gone 3 games without a wicket. And I think he got a duck in the last game as well. Not that he's there for his batting. Having said that, it can be handy down the order. But I wonder whether he's under pressure. I mean, not the Indians are like in terms of their cricket, but to be the highest paid player ever and to go 3 games without a wicket, albeit 2020.
We could ring in Clarkey. He's just getting some ink, though. So
tattoo.
Yeah. As I just saw on his socials.
What did he get tattooed?
What did he all say?
I'm not
BSB?
Sure.
Well, he'd be wearing the BSB cap around or the jumper. For sure.
What about Loz on his arm? Just to show your friendship with him.
Yeah, has anyone ever done that?
No.
No one's ever.
Dog, maybe?
Have you ever had anything tattooed? No, you haven't got a tattoo either.
Nah, I'm not a tattoo man.
You and I must be the only blokes that haven't got tattoos.
I don't think I'd look real tough or masculine with a tattoo.
Imagine Doggy with the tough sticker on.
Little white arms with a big black tattoo. I don't think it'd work.
Called up Snake.
Yeah. I see, was it Taylan May? Got one yesterday with May around his neck.
Yeah. Dog. Imagine that. Dog.
Dog.
Wolf. Chain.
All the fields are out for the 4 Group 1s. And also the Tab Percy Sykes, of course, the Group 2 race for the 2-year-old fillies over 1,200 metres, million-dollar race, the Percy Sykes. But for the Queen Elizabeth via Sestina, it's come up a $2.30 favourite, Drew Barrier 5 of 11. Saw James Cummings conceding that it could be Cascadian's last race start. He's a rising 10-year-old. He's $8 with the market with Tab for the Queen Elizabeth. Kiwi filly or Kestrel's the other big event, is it? Looking forward to seeing her go around again. After, you know, she needed all of 2,000 metres to win the Vinery the other week at Rose Hill, and barrier 3 of 10 for Orchestral, and is $1.90 into $1.80 for the ATC Oaks on Saturday. So going to be a great day, day two of the championships. What are you reading there?
Oh, it's a nasty text. No name, Loz. Surely Bulldog got a start on Disney on Ice. The bloke looks like Elmer Fudd.
That's,
you wascally rabbit.
That's
a bit cruel.
That's a bit cruel.
Oh, I love that. It's not about me.
It's probably under your phone number.
Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald. How are you, mate?
Oh, the listeners don't miss, do they, Middo? They're very clever. They're
very cruel.
They are cruel. They can be cruel, but they're very clever too.
When are they cruel, at Bulldogs? Sunday or when you come in on Wednesday?
Every day.
Right, okay.
Every day. Every day that ends in Y, they're cruel.
Right. Ray wouldn't be criticised, though, would he?
He cops a bit.
Does he?
A little bit, yeah.
How can you criticise Ray?
I don't know. It upsets him a bit sometimes.
Yeah.
But, he'd never be
criticised off anyone, Ray.
He's a legend.
He's a lovely man.
Hey, Adam, is JD going to survive the weekend?
Oh, well, are you talking before Saturday night, the Bulldogs, obviously, or after Saturday night? he'll survive the coach's game, obviously, but depending on this result, I'd expect some action or news, I suppose, in the next 24 to 48 hours after that game. It just doesn't stop at the moment, does it, Doggy? Around, I was going to say Redfern, but they don't train at Redfern anymore, do they? So,
is it win or bust?
I think the manner of the performance and the result, Loz, will tell a lot. But he probably needs a win. Like, that's what he needs. He needs a win, and probably nothing else will suffice, to tell you the truth. Because once South get to this juncture of the season, they've played six games, they only won one match in six games, so they can't beat Cronulla this Saturday night. That's not going to be acceptable for them. And given they've got the bye week, it'll give them time to try and organise themselves and decide what they want to do. Russell's obviously filming this movie over in Budapest or Hungary at the moment, but he'll be in constant communication with South's hierarchy about what his thoughts are and where he thinks the club's going. So I tend to agree with you a little bit, Loz. I think it's win or bust. Otherwise, you know, and I don't want to say this because I feel for Jason. He's doing his best to try and coach that team and get them out of the hole they are, but it's quite clearly it's 80 minutes that's probably going to define his coaching career, or at least his coaching year with South this year.
And then if that occurs, obviously there's a stop-gap coach in place.
Yeah, and they've got Ben Hornby available there, Loz. He's the assistant at the moment, and obviously he went close to getting the Dragons job on a full-time basis last year. He was certainly in the mix to get that job last year, so he's adept.
Is Wayne the walk-up starter, mate? Is he just like a walk-up start?
I don't know, Loz. I heard you guys debating it on NRL 360 last night about what Wayne's going to do, and Wayne's the master politician. He'll make this drag out and play out for a while. Maybe he's got eyes on Parramatta. Maybe he's looking at Parramatta thinking that's the club that I want to take to. The thing about Wayne, Loz, is that he wants to keep coaching, but also he's very acutely aware of the legacy that he can leave. And no coach has ever won a premiership at three different clubs. Now, he's done it, obviously, at the Broncos many, many times. He's done it at the Dragons. He came very, very close to doing it at South in 2021. I reckon he'll want to finish his career by going to another club and winning another grand final. And Wayne will go to the club that he thinks, this is my opinion, he'll go to the club that he thinks will present him the best chance of winning a grand final. He doesn't want to rebuild or anything like that. And cash probably won't be as big a factor for him this time as what it has been in the past. He'll want to win another premiership. Does he think that maybe South are the team to do that, given where they are at the moment and where that roster's at, or does he wait for another club? That's the question mark.
Let's talk some racing heading into day two of the championships. And, Joe Pride throwing his colt, Chaowulf, after just being beaten in the Derby. Chaowulf backers still got their heads in hand. Might have been one of them. But, to take on the older horses in a Queen Elizabeth at Weigh for Age, big task, $15 in the market with Tab.
It's a big call, Middo, and one that I'm glad he's made because it adds so much interest to this race on Saturday in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. We're all talking about, obviously, our better weight for age horses, but to have a three-year-old thrown into the mix, particularly on a short backup as well, just adds that little bit of X factor and intrigue to the race. So I thought he was great in the Derby last week, and Joe knows that horse better than most. He would have known if he's come through that run on a heavy track relatively well, and I'm assuming he has, given the fact that he's entered in for the QE Stakes on the weekend there. So, yeah, I don't know how to line him up because we obviously haven't seen him against these type of horses before, but certainly adds a whole lot of interest. So I'm still you know what I think Mido will be is Sistina. I'm still heavily in her camp. She could be already, as I said on Monday, the best horse in racing Australia at the moment from what we saw on the, a couple of weeks ago. But she'll be taken out of her comfort zone a little bit in this race with Pride of Jenny engaged. But I reckon a faster tempo probably suit her more. We know she's going to be a really strong over, or in time, hopefully over a mile and a quarter. And this 2,000-metre race with Pride of Jenny engaged should just play right into her hands.
In the Oaks, does anyone beat Orchestral or Zardozi?
They're dominating the market, Lods, and probably with good reason. Obviously, James had the option to run Zardozi in the Derby last week, and he was quite open, saying that he thought that the filly was up to matching the colts or the boys in the Derby. But obviously, with all that rain we had in the 24 or 48 hours leading up to race day, he probably thought it was a safer option to give another week to get over that run in the Vinery and get it ready for the Oaks. So I can understand why Kestrel was favourite, but I just thought Zardozi might have just been half a run short there in the Vinery. She sort of loomed up at about the furlong pole and just petered out in a run a little bit. So what we saw in the spring, obviously heading towards the Oaks, I've got no doubt about her running out a strong mile and a half here, and I'm going to give her a chance to turn the tables. I still think Orchestral deserves to be favourite, but with a discrepancy in the price at the moment, I'm happy to lean just a little bit towards her way. I'm still respecting Tutu La Vida, who was an enormous run in the Vinery, and Autumn Angel is obviously going to present herself with a chance as well. But yeah, fascinating race the Oaks this year. Only a small field, but plenty of class at the top end of that market.
Now, Jason Collett's had a fall at Kembla.
Yeah, he did yesterday, Mido. So hopefully everything will be okay. The initial reports are that he went to hospital, but was only sort of complaining of some pretty deep bruising. So we'll obviously get some more news on that later today. But he relayed to family and obviously the Jockey Association shortly after it happened that he thought he was going to be okay. He walked back to the ambulance pretty gingerly, but let's hope he's right to go on the weekend because obviously it's a really important time of year. Jason's having a fantastic season. He's challenging for the Sydney Jockeys Premiership this year, which would be his first mine if he can get himself over the line. So he doesn't want to miss any time from being in the saddle.
Now, is Italian Hong Kong jockey Andrea Azzini out here?
He is, Mido. Yeah, I saw some reports that are emerging late last night that he was going to come down to make a very, very rare trip down to Australia to ride for Kieran Maher on Circle of Fire. So we don't get to see Andrea down in Australia very often at all, but that horse we know was so impressive winning the Chairman's last week. Kieran Maher's always had a very deliberate plan for him to run in that lead-up race and then back up a week later in the Sydney Cup. And given he's got such a light weight, he's down there with 51.5 kilos. I think that was sort of searching far and wide to try and find a lightweight jockey who could take the ride on short notice. And Andrea obviously presents himself as that opportunity. Kieran didn't declare riders yesterday when that field was finally declared, but all the reports last night were that Andrea Azzini is going to be coming down to ride in Sydney. So good to see him. He's got a bit of a tough barrier draw to negotiate, but obviously if that horse holds his form from last week, he'll be riding the finish of the Sydney Cup.
We might get some Masters bets off you tomorrow as well.
Okay, I'll have a look, Mido. I was just thinking about it last night, actually. There's not a whole lot of guys showing some stellar form heading into the Masters this year, apart from Scotty Scheffler.
Well, that's why it's $5.50, isn't it?
Exactly. He's been absolutely dominant on the PGA Tour for the last few months and obviously winning the Players and a couple of other events. So it's understandable why he's such a short price favourite, but it's a golf tournament, Mido. You know what they're like. People can come from the clouds to win events like this. So, yeah, I'll have a bit of a look for you and see what we can find and maybe have a couple of Masters bets tomorrow morning.
Beautiful stuff, mate. Thank you.
Hey, boys.
Coming up over in the States, Evan Priest is going to join us shortly to get the latest from Augusta National over there. And then we've got Damien Cook coming up in about 20 minutes' time. We've also got this morning Matty Prout, New South Wales Swiss mid-quarter. Super Netball starts this weekend. The Swiss play the Sunshine Coast Lightning away. So we'll preview the season with Matty Prout, and Brad Davidson will join us as well for some midweek mail, as will Mitch Menners also. And even though Bulldogs co-hosting, Bulldogs segment will still go ahead this morning. Was that a demand, Bulldog?
It was part of the agreement.
Yeah, okay.
It was part of the agreement.
Did you have to go past the captain to,
no, no,
to
no,
get
no,
this
no,
through?
No, 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 straight over his head.
Do you get paid more today for doing the full show?
Well, I would certainly
just get paid
hope so.
For doing your
but
segment?
Do I get paid for the show then also paid for my segment?
No.
That's the key question.
No, just one payment.
Why?
Because that's the way the contract is written.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm across your contract.
Yeah, there is no contract. It's for the love
your
of rugby
agreement?
League. The love of the game, the love of this show, the love of this station.
Let's go to the States. Evan Priest joining us. How are you, Evan?
G'day, Mido. Good. I'm very good, mate. It's just all the stories and storylines are coming at a flurry late on the Tuesday afternoon practice round. People say that golf is boring. They should come to the Masters because things are even happening in the practice rounds. We've got Tiger Woods saying he can win again. We've got the Aussie contingent battling an injury and illness cloud. We've got everything happening here. So, keen to chat some golf, boys.
Well, you mentioned Tiger. He had his press conference. Is that what came out of it? He thinks he can win.
Yeah, in no uncertain terms, he thinks he can win. He was asked by a reporter, a guy called Mark Cannizzaro, who was actually at the NRL Vegas a couple of weeks ago. He was asked, you know, can he still win? And he said, absolutely. I think that if I put it all together, I can win one more. And it was very telling that he said one more. It's almost like he knows he's probably really realistically only got one more major championship victory in him. And if that's going to be the case, it's probably going to be here at Augusta, which rewards experience better than any other major. And then he was followed up as if to say, you know, could you ever see a scenario where you're a ceremonial golfer who's not really competitive? And he interrupted the reporter and said, I'm not at that point yet. I think I can still win. So if you're a big Tiger Woods fan, that was music to your ears.
Tell us about this 6'8" South African amateur.
Yeah, this is one of the quirkiest stories from overnight. So every Monday night at Augusta National during the Masters week, they have a dinner for the amateurs. There's five amateurs in the field this week. One of them is actually an Aussie from Victoria. They have a bit of a dinner and they stay in what's called the Crow's Nest, which is kind of like a dorm room inside the clubhouse of Augusta National for the amateurs. Accommodations come so far ahead of Augusta National these days that the amateurs don't really stay in there anymore. But they're typically, after that dinner, it's customary for those amateurs to stay in the Crow's Nest. And this bloke is literally 6'8". Absolutely should be playing NBA basketball, not golf. South African, by the way, of Georgia Tech. Completely lost his South African accent. And he was asked, mate, do you even fit in those beds? And he said, no, there's not really a bed in America that's comfortable for me. But it was the most best uncomfortable sleep of his life. And he's the British amateur champion who played. He actually co-led the British Open after the first round. Hits it an absolute mile into the stratosphere. A lot of game, a lot of potential. Been playing college golf at the famous Georgia Tech University. And, he's a hot tip to be the low amateur this week if he can get some more rest.
Evan, John Rahm's much-hyped move to live. How do you think he'll go? And does he come in fresh?
Yeah, he comes in fresh. He's actually, you know, more rested than he would normally be if he was still playing on the PGA Tour. If he was playing on the tour still, he probably would have had about maybe 7 or 8 tournaments under his belt coming into the Masters, and that can go one of two ways. You can either be really sharp and really in the swing of things, or you can be fatigued and get to Augusta National and just, you know, lose it. So he's coming in well rested. He's been playing really solid on lead golf without actually winning in those 54-player fields, but you know, he's the defending Masters champion. He said he was actually more nervous about hosting the Champions Dinner tonight and whether the other Masters champions will appreciate the Spanish-inspired menu that he's got going on tonight. But, you know, so his preparations and focus is kind of on that at the moment, which is kind of funny. But once he gets that Champions Dinner out of the way, he'll be able to really knuckle down on his Augusta preparations. And it wouldn't surprise me if he went back-to-back.
Now, the pairings have been announced. Is there any pairings that you're really looking forward to see?
Yeah, absolutely, Loz. We've actually got Jason Day with Tiger Woods and Max Homer. So Day's been given the ultimate compliment by Masters officials. He's been put in, you know, arguably the most sought-after group, the one that's going to have thousands and thousands of fans following it. So really excited about that one. Cameron Smith's actually playing with Wyndham Clark, the reigning US Open champion, so that should be a really good one as well. But just this afternoon, it's going to come out that parts of the Australian contingent are suffering an injury and illness cloud. We've got Minwoo Lee just told reporters, myself included, that he broke his right finger last week in the gym, dropped a dumbbell on it. So his injury, he only hit a full swing for the first time in about a few days on Friday. And then we've got Cameron Smith, who as we all know, withdrew from the LIV Golf Tournament in Miami last week with food poisoning that kind of came back and rocked him. And I think it brought on the flu because of his low immune system. And he said that his whole body shut down, really, and that he was, you know, basically in bed for all of the weekend. And he said that wasn't the best preparation. But having said that, today he looked quite good. He tried to jump over Rays Creek on the par 5 13. He was swinging it really well, a bit smoother than he normally swings it, maybe because he is sort of a bit ginger recovering from that flu. But we've got Lin Wu and Cam Smith trying to, you know, recover in time for the Masters to kick off on Thursday. But having said that, Jason Day and Adam Scott looked perfect. And they played a practice round the four. It was an all-Australian practice round this afternoon. Jason Day, Adam Scott, Lin Wu leading Cam Smith. And it was all smiles out there. So fingers crossed the boys recover in time.
With the pairings, how do they select them? Is it out of a barrel or they've just got the powers to select the groups?
Yeah, Loz, they have the powers to select the group. There are a few traditional pairings. It's never really a written rule, but sometimes they group, you know, the defending Masters champion with the US amateur champion, and I think maybe the British Open champion. I can't quite remember, but there are a few traditional pairings. Yep. They don't really set those in stone. Some of the other majors do have traditional pairings where they group defending champions or US Open champions together or the reigning major champions from the previous year together. So it's just kind of a bit of a random, and sometimes they look at the draw and say, well, we're going to send Jason Day out with Tiger Woods in the afternoon on Thursday. And a little bit of a shame for Oz is that the Tiger Woods and Jason Day pairing comes in at 3:14 in the morning. So it's a bit of an early start there. But if you're willing to get up pretty early, 5:15 or so Australian Eastern time, standard time, you'll be able to catch the back nine of Jason Day and Tiger Woods. So that should be a good one.
For those who haven't been to Augusta, which is obviously a lot of us, just paint the picture. So the course is what, about half an hour from the town? And isn't the town a bit of a dive?
Yeah, it's a pretty hard-working, you know, gritty, it's a gas town, actually. And I can't remember what company it is, but there's a gas plant that coincidentally has brought a few Australians over to work in Augusta, Georgia. But it's kind of in the middle of nowhere in between, say, Atlanta, which is obviously the big city of Georgia, the state of Georgia, and out on the Georgian coastline where Savannah and Hilton Head Island, South Carolina is. So in the middle of nowhere, you know, just a stop along the highway, real working class gas town, and, you know, 51 weeks a year, it's kind of, I wouldn't say grim, but it is a really tough town. The hotels, they go from, you know, some of the motels in town, they go from $20 or $30 a night to $600, $700 a night for one-star hotels, just because, you know, the entire sporting world basically rolls into this small town in Georgia for 7 days and then rolls straight out. So, yeah, Augusta National is an extremely beautiful place. And I've got a few people that have asked me this week, you know, why is maybe the best golf course or the most famous course in the world kind of set in this, you know, pretty working-class area of Georgia? It's just the piece of land that's, you know, the beautiful Georgia pines and the dogwoods and the azaleas blooming and the kind of rolling hills is why the co-founders of the Augusta National Golf Club chose this as the site. And then they got a famous architect in there, Dr. Alistair McKenzie, and created this absolute masterpiece. And over time, it's become the absolute Disneyland of golf. You know, like there's not a blade of grass out of place. It's incredibly beautiful and green. There are rolling hills and pine straw, and it's just a really, really picturesque place. But a bit of a contrast from the outside world.
Evan, if it's a gritty working class town that isn't very big, where do the star players stay out of curiosity? Where do they hunker down or bunker down for the night?
Yeah, good question, Bulldog. You know, like any town, you know, there are towns in Australia that are similar where there are working class, but there are pockets of sort of wealth and whatnot. And I think particularly because of the tournament, parts of Augusta and it's on the border of Augusta, Georgia and South Carolina for that matter. There are parts of it that are quite wealthy, little neighbourhoods and little gated golf communities and whatnot. So the rental house market has become a real thing over here. And a lot of it is kind of sanctioned or regulated by Augusta National Golf Club. And they do sort of run like a housing portal. But there's some really nice little neighbourhoods with big mansions and the players tend to rent those houses. And some of those houses can up to $20,000-$30,000 for the week, and they actually subsidise a lot of people's mortgages and send them on holidays, put their kids through college and whatnot. It really is this incredible economy that rolls in for 7 days and rolls straight out and funds this town for most of the year.
Evan, mate, we'll get all your Masters selections tomorrow. Enjoy. Thank you.
I can't wait. Thank you, boys. Talk to you tomorrow.